From KUOW in Seattle, this is Soundside. I'm Libby Dankman. April is National Poetry Month, and KUOW is celebrating with 30 days of poems and poets. Over the last month, we've been joined by Shinyi Pai, Seattle civic poet and the host of KUOW's podcast, 10,000 Things. Welcome back, Shinyi.
Hi, Libby. It's great to be back.
Good to have you back. So who did you speak with for this final Soundside Poetry Month segment?
For this segment, I spoke to Raul Sanchez, who is a Mexican-American poet who is a very fine writer and a person who's working in the region as a teacher and mentor to incarcerated youth through the Pongo Poetry Project.
And why did you want to speak with Raul?
Raul's experiences, his life experiences, and his sensibilities as a writer are very interesting to me. He's an immigrant from Mexico and came over in his young adulthood, and he just has a really beautiful perspective on place and belonging. I also feel like I love the quality of his voice, which is a very heavily accented English. And that's something I think about a lot as somebody who had immigrant parents who had accents and people who often had perceptions of what it meant to have accented English. Mm-hmm. It just feels like something really important to put those voices on the air and their stories.
Yeah. For somebody who's never read his work, what strikes you about Raul's poetry in particular?
I would say that he has a depth of spirituality and presence in his poems. I think of him as a poet of faith and someone who writes a great deal about the sacred, about topics that touch into kind of a larger universal experience.
So Poetry Month may be ending, but of course, poetry goes on. Shinyi, where can people find your work going forward? And what do you got going on? What's cooking?
The second season of my podcast, 10,000 Things, which is about Asian American stories, relaunches on May the 1st, Monday. And every Monday, there will be a new episode that releases, and it'll be 8 weeks of stories from Asian Americans from the Pacific Northwest and beyond. And that is the big thing that I'm working on. But I also have a couple of poetry books that'll be out this fall from Empty Bowl Press and Blue Cactus Press.
Beautiful. We will look forward to those. And thanks again so much for joining us this Poetry Month. Without further ado, here's Shinyi Pai's conversation with Raul Sanchez.
In the 1940s, the Bracero Program was an agreement between the United States and Mexico that brought millions of migrant workers to the United States. Many families settled in central and eastern Washington during this time, working in fields while U.S. servicemen were drafted abroad. Raul Sanchez's father was one of those workers, and his stay in Washington was a point of inspiration.
His experience here prompted him to have his son, me, the first one, to learn English and speak the way those people from the North.
And so Raul did. He went on to work for a degree in electrical engineering before having to drop out to work and support his family. During this time in Raul's life, he went back and forth between Mexico and the U.S., caught between two cultures. His poetry has that same kind of listlessness over the borders of Spanish and English, of formal language and offhand slang. That variety is something he likens to the flavor of his poetry.
It's like adding a little more spice to your salad. You're putting a little more, you know, make it taste better. Who wants to eat plain old spinach? It's good, but put a little olive oil.
To demonstrate that poetic osmosis, I asked Raul to first read his poem, Vines and Wind, which is written in both English and Spanish.
So first in English, because this one, that's how it came to me. Vines and wind. Wet grass, wind, motors, children running. I am back to the night my father held my hand across the park where we sat. That cement bench still there. Vines draped over the line. My father's arm draped over my back. The wind, his soft voice, his words, distant chimes. I love you, your noble heart. Indelible, ripe as pears, his sweetness waiting to fall. My father gone, late fall, I was 12, too young to learn what he couldn't teach me, to plant vines, to drape like memories, like wind. viñas y viento. Hierba mojada, viento, motores, niños corriendo. He vuelto a la noche cuando mi padre sostenía mi mano en el parque de enfrente donde nos sentamos. Esa banca de cemento todavía allí. Viñas colgando en los alambres, el brazo de mi padre colgando sobre mi espalda. El viento, su voz suave, sus palabras, campanadas distantes. Te amo, tu noble corazón. Imborrable, maduro como las peras, su dulzura esperando a caer. Mi padre falleció fines de otoño. Tenía 12 años, muy joven para aprender lo que él no pudo enseñarme, a plantar vides para colgarlas como los recuerdos, como el viento.
I have this question in my mind about your relationship to language and bilingualism. You know, you're able to switch back and forth very easily between the two languages. And for your father, it was very important that you learn English. And I feel like I relate to that very much because my parents were immigrants from Taiwan. And for them, it was really important that I be able to assimilate into the culture so that I could fit in and just, you know, be mobile or flexible within the culture. And so I'm really curious about this relationship to language because you are often writing poems in English, which wasn't your father's native tongue. And is there that kind of tension with this sense of like the colonialism of the English language and your relationship to it?
Well, there is. I remember Jose Coser, a poet that visited here some time ago. He told me once that English is a very linear language. And in our language, we have the choice to diversify the words. There is one word that could mean a myriad of things, even improper things that we don't use. But to bring that onto the page and to associate that with the thought of what does this really mean to me and why do I want to use this word? Because it has more meaning if I use it in the language of my roots instead of the English translation. Because if I put it in Spanish, it carries more weight.
Mm-hmm.
And if I let it hang in there when I do the readings, it's even heavier. In English, it could be a word that they hear all the time on the radio. They read it in the newspapers. But if I say it with the meaning that that word carries, that's the value of the delivery of the poem, the message in it.
So tell me a little bit about the voice that you've developed in your poems over this, you know, 20, 30 years of writing. Because, you know, the voice that we find or claim as a poet can grow and evolve and change over time. Tell me about the voice in your poems.
The voice has been the one of the immigrant that is trying to achieve something that for some was totally unthinkable. Through Los Norteños, the group that I joined in 1995, I was able to learn audibly and by practicing and reading and going to the workshops and just not be afraid and get up on the mic and read what I had to read. And yes, we all know that in the beginning, everything is crap. You know, nothing quite works that well. It takes years to polish it. But to come to the point where I am now that I have, you know, only two books, and I say only two books because I'm a humble guy. I'm not going out there with blaring horns or making a big hassle about. We're all different, you know. Luck happens in many different ways. So I have been able to do that, and the words that I carry, for example, in my latest book is divided in four sections. The first section, and this is to create the movement of the language with me walking through it, through the pyramids of Mexico, through the situations and cultural aspects of my grandmother, the smoke cleansing ceremonies, certain foods that people like to eat here in the U.S. And then the last part is more local, where all the nature, all the other activities I have done in the city, in Buren, in Redmond, you know, it's all here because I'm honoring the place that I live with the due respect to the native friends that we have here. We're all our brothers, again. And I have taken on the theme of the human forest because like the trees. They're all different. They're cedar and pine and magnolias and little shrubs and bushes and roses and pine trees, etc. All the roots are in the ground. And we are the human forest. We just do not know where our roots come from. But once we see how they interconnect, then things start to make sense. So the human nature becomes more human and about nature in itself.
Well, I'd like to shift gears. I would like you to tell me about your work with young people through Pongo Poetry Project, how you got involved in working with youth, and what is Pongo?
Pongo is an organization that has been around, I believe, over 25 years. Richard Gold is the founder, and I met him. And I went to the table, I looked at the pamphlets, and I thought, I really want to do this. Because, you know, I felt compelled to do something for others, not just me. And the reason for that, I guess, immediately my brain switched to, I lost my father, or he died, passed away when I was 12. So not having a father contributes to a lot of things. And we went to a couple of interviews, and then I got all my background checked because, you know, you got to get a criminal background, etc. And then we started going. We're going into the juvenile detention center in King County, right here on 12th Avenue and near Seattle U. I really like working with these young people. And one of the reasons, one the main one, is that my previous marriage, I got three boys that were born in there, one a set of twins and then the first son. When the divorce happens to anyone, terrible things happen to your progeny, whether you want to or not. Sad to say, my oldest and one of the twins, they got in serious troubles and, you know, they ended up also spending time in jail and detention and all that. And me so far away on the northwest corner of the state and them living in the southeast corner, impossible to do anything. So parenting became extremely difficult. So the result of that was there's no guidance and people get in trouble. So being in there, I was able to keep that in mind as a, not necessarily a, to remedy or to redeem myself, but at the same time to do something for others that I perhaps that I couldn't do for my own. Right. And at that time, I started meeting with the young students, and I learned a lot because not everybody has the same background. You know, everybody comes from, they could be rich or poor, they get in trouble, they end up in there, and then they have to face their own reality because you got to abide, you have to abide by the rules. You cannot just be too willy-nilly, you know, anything you want here and there. So I did gain a lot, and I want to go back to, after once COVID hit, we couldn't go back in there to the juvenile detention center. It was, we tried Zoom, but the thing about being with the people right in front of you is that you get to see their emotions, you get to see their body movement, you get to see what they are writing.
You feel it.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And you, are they scratching it? What are you thinking? And can you tell me what do you mean by this? And totally full heart open just to give them that the compassion that they need from an adult. Because some of those kids have also been abused by other adults. So their confidence, the trust in other adults is nil. So if they see somebody like out of the blue, we are volunteers, we're going to write a little bit of poetry. How are you today? Would you prefer to write something on your own? You can pick the theme you want. You don't have to write anything. You can write a couple of lines in there. The answer generally is they don't want to do it.
Well, there's no choice involved.
No choice. So if you tell them, like in the middle school, do some kids, they want to write, say, can I draw? I say, sure, go ahead, drawing. I'll help you find the poetry later. And it always works.
Of course.
If there's no pressure, the gates open and you can hear it gushing. One thing that I have used in school and in detention, I tell them, okay, today we're going to bleed on the page. And they go, I say, yes. You're going to feel the emotion in your heart and the memory start to flow. You're going to feel it tingling, going through your chest and across your arm, over your shoulder, and down your forearm, and you're feeling all the way down your wrist until it hits the tip of your pencil, and you're going to be writing, you're going to be bleeding that, you're going to be pulling out those bad roots that are bothering you, that are keeping you down, that are holding you up. And it works. They understand this, but they have not given the chance.
So I know that it's not always useful to generalize, but I'm curious if you see in writing from people who have been incarcerated any particular themes or qualities that you don't see in your students or, you know, community who have not had that experience.
Well, the first one is I should have listened to my mother or my father, or I cannot trust on people I don't know. I cannot believe that I remember my family did this to me. I did what I did because I needed the money, prostitution, or selling drugs. Then they get caught. And then asking about the positive, well, what would you like to, you know, when you get released? Well, I had to get a job. I said, well, why don't you get a part-time job and try to go to school, get your degree, finish your GED. Again, this is like me talking through a gauze, through my sons.
Yes.
See, I'm seeing a person, but I'm thinking in a different way. So when I do that, I feel vulnerable. And I just give them everything I have. Because I cannot do it with them. Because they're gone, too. And the third one is still around, but he has problems, and we try to help them, but, you know, some people sometimes they don't want to get help. They just think they're tough enough to handle it.
Yeah.
Until the bricks crumble down.
I really appreciate your being so vulnerable. I thought maybe we could shift the tone a little bit. So do you feel like there's a certain style or theme that you see that defines the feeling of Seattle or Washington poetry?
Well, number one, there's a lot of us in here, and competition is tough when we start looking at participating here and there, etc. But at the same time, as many of us as there are not that many events to see and hear all of these wonderful poets. That's why I started, during COVID, the Poetry in the Park in my neighborhood, Lake City. So I tried to be engaging the people in the poetry, because if the spaces are there, why not use them? So I also had the opportunity to work for or collaborate with the City of Shoreline in the Voices in the Forest project.
Will you read that poem?
Sure. I'll read the one that it is now dedicated to the tragedy that took place in our neighborhood in 2019, when a guy drunk blocked out and killed a couple of people and caused a lot of mayhem there. But this poem doesn't talk about that. This is just about the tree that is there in memory of all those two people who passed away, and whose one of them, his ashes are on at the roots of that tree. So this tree means a lot. And I had a poem about it. Ode to an Oak Tree. Epigraph by Thomas Carlyle. When the oak is felled, the whole forest echoes with its fall. But 100 acorns are sown in silence by an unnoticed breeze. Acres of aging, grand trees on the lower ground, boughs bending, rising and falling with the wind, randomly sinking and fainting, responsive bird songs, dry ground covered with heart-shaped leaves and twigs. At night, the trees on the higher ground cast their shadow under the clear moonlight. Your branches, blown by the east-west wind, secrets told when the birds can't sleep. Full moon filled with continents, dense, murky, clouds, reds of fragrant pines, oak and cedar limbs swish with the wind brushed, your very old mystical greatness stands. Looking at the stars and the gorgeous clouds in summertime, your sun-drenched splendor shelters birds hanging on your moist branches, crows, blue jays, chickadees, and eagle nests. Nakedly standing in spring, your dormant roots thaw below the frozen ground. Do not say that the roots are weak. These roots are strong, the very roots of being.
Thank you for sharing that poem. What's one thing you'd like to say about the poetry of the region where we live to an audience that doesn't read it or care about poetry or doesn't understand it and just maybe wants to know more about it?
For the English audience, well, there's so many books that they can find everywhere in classes, and they naturally have the interest in all types of fiction and poetry. And here we have the Poetry Northwest, the magazine, and a lot of other activities and bookstores that support poetry and poems. Mm-hmm. Unlike other cities, it's a desert. There's nothing. Here, it's almost like being in Rome. There's a water fountain on every corner. And here, there's a bookstore just about everywhere you go. And everywhere you hear a name, they happen to know you, somebody that knows you, and somebody heard it. So it's a very cohesive, in a way. And again, sometimes I think that there are too many of us who are trying to do too many things, and it's like trying to, like the roulette, where's the little ball going against the plate, right, where the ball is going to end. So it depends on how we are going to be able to fit a sea and have events people can come, mm-hmm. because it's impossible to, you know, have a regular program of poetry for the whole year. No, it's impossible. But it is good. And poetry flourishes about the city, about the people. And I think that Seattle has even more potential because there's so many of us from everywhere in here. And we can all come together in the project that you're on now. It's definitely the board to jump up and, you know, go deep and explore all of these. There's so much to grab from and add to the whole result of enhancing the poetry in Seattle.
Well, I have one last question for you. You are the former poet laureate of the city of Redmond, and what do you think the role of poetry is in civic life?
The value of poetry in civic life is that it makes us see what we do not normally hear on the regular media. It makes us focus on the essence of the subject, and it makes us realize what is important. A lot of poets, the poems, they could have all kinds of themes about animals, about family, about love, about death, nature. All of that is important because that is what, I will put it this way. It will be the news that you hear every day, but with more flavor, with more meaning. You know,
more spices.
Condensed news, but in a way that is makes us appreciate what we have.
Yeah.
You know, our environment, our people, despite of all the other issues that are going on in the city, we cannot ignore them. But if we want to make allusion to that, so why don't we just write about it? And maybe somebody can be more, if you heard of people put it that way, maybe there is something that we need to get involved with. Because the cliches and the standard stuff that we hear in the news is all the same. Mm-hmm. So if we get together and say, hey, why don't we get all these people? Maybe they'll be interested in, cleaning up and learning a little bit of poetry or giving books. Maybe they want to use them. That would be one way to bring everybody else closer to, even those who are not that curious or interested in poetry. Because I have found some of them. And then others that surprised me totally.
Terrific. Raul, mil gracias. Thank you.
You're welcome. My pleasure.